This is the Bible Show. Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Bible Show. My name is Sam, and joining me is Will. And why are you laughing?
I don't know why I started laughing.
What was that about? That totally threw me off.
No, you did great.
All right, cool. So today we're continuing our series in the book of Genesis, and we're kind of closing the chapter on Isaac. Isaac's about to give over the blessing to the next generation, and it's not going to go the way that he thinks it's going to go. But before we jump into this, for the people who are kind of jumping into this or maybe haven't been following along, like the story of Genesis, one of the main ideas of it is God comes in the very beginning, even at the fall in Genesis 3, and he gives a promise that, yes, the world is falling into death and disrepair and sin, and there's going to be pain and everything else, but he is going to bring about the seed of the woman who's going to crush the head of the snake, who's going to overthrow death and sin and everything else. And so you leave Genesis 3 and you're like, okay, cool, where's the Messiah? Who's he going to be born of? It could be anybody born of women, right? And so then you get to Noah, and God says, I'm never going to judge the world again by water. And then, like, after Noah, you get to Abraham, and for the first time, God narrows down the search of who the Messiah is going to be. And he says to Abraham, Abraham, I'm giving you a promise. And this blessing, you know, and your seed and your lineage, every single nation on earth is going to be blessed. And so you're like, oh, the Messiah is going to come through the line of Abraham, right? You know, those who bless you are going to be blessed. Those who curse you are going to be cursed. All these things. I'm going to give you a land. Your descendants are going to number like the stars in the sky. All those promises. And then it's like, okay, which kid of Abraham? Like, is it going to be Ishmael? Is it going to be Isaac? Is it one of Keturah's sons? And nope, God says it's going to be Isaac. And so it narrows down to Isaac. And so at the beginning of Genesis 27, we have the seed of promise that's in this guy, right? We know it's Isaac, and it's like, okay, who's it going to fall to? And in the two chapters ago in Genesis 25, we see that Isaac gets his wife, Rebecca, pregnant, and the pregnancy is kind of wild, right? They're wrestling around, like there's chaos in the womb. She's inquiring of the Lord, like, what's going on? Is this pregnancy okay? And he gives her a promise that says what?
They're at war at each other.
They're at war with each other. And how's this going to turn out? Which one of the two sons is going to be God's chosen one?
The younger, because the older will serve the younger.
That's right. So the older is going to serve the younger. And it's like God is showing. He's the God of the underdog. He always picks the one that you don't expect. In a culture of primogeniture, which is a fancy word of saying the firstborn always gets all the good stuff, God's like, nope, it's going to be the younger. And you're like, man, this guy keeps picking the underdog. He keeps picking the outcast. He keeps showing favor upon those that don't deserve it. Like, there's something in the heart of our God that looks at the downcast and lifts them up. Like, it's in his nature or something. And so from that chapter, you have Rebecca that is told by God that the older is going to serve the younger. Now, presumably, do you think she has this conversation with Isaac? Like, you wouldn't believe what the Lord told me.
Doesn't seem like it.
It doesn't seem like it. Because in this chapter, like, we're told back then that Isaac loves the firstborn son. How does he come out of the womb, by the way? You remember?
Red.
Esau comes out red and hairy. So those, the names Esau and Edom, which are both names that apply to Esau, are red and hairy. And Jacob comes out. And what is Jacob doing when he comes out of the womb?
He's grasping Esau's heel.
He's the heel grabber, which means, like, to supplant. His name Jacob literally means, like, heel grabber, or somebody who's supplanting. I'm tripping you up. I'm causing you to fall. It's not a great thing. It's got, like, echoes back to Satan, who is the one who strikes at the heel. Like, there, it's not great descriptors that are given to Jacob at all from the get-go.
Yeah. And yet you name your kid that, which, again, is wild.
Yeah, we did. Anyway, moving right along, it's a great name because it's a guy who loves the promise of God. That's why we picked that. But moving right along, so Jacob is presented to us as, like, all these things and kind of omens almost of, like, this guy's out of the gates. He's a schemer. Like, God's going to choose him. Yeah. And from the get-go of Jacob's story, it's bracing you to be like, God's about to pick somebody, even his name suggest this isn't somebody God should pick. And so in today's story, you're going to see the wheels come off. And you see this guy is deceptive. You get to see that this whole family falls apart. So if you remember, like, we really built up Rebecca. You remember?
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca's this Isaac's wife. Like, she's beautiful. She hasn't been with a man. She's at the time, at the point of marriage, she's so servant hearted. She waters all of his camels. She does all these things. She's a praying wife. He's a praying guy. Like, the Bible is leading you to go, remember, like, Isaac seems a little bit better than Abraham. Even in his stumbles, he doesn't stumble as badly. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, okay, they're getting better. And then you get to this chapter and everybody's unlikable. Everybody's wrong. Everybody's bad. And you're like, why is this our holy book? You know? And Genesis keeps doing that. Do you think it's by accident?
No, can't be.
What's it doing?
Saying we're not the hero.
That's exactly right.
And none of these guys are, you know, the one that's going to break the head of the serpent.
Yeah. So the Bible is not coming to you. So you have to brace yourself for a chapter like this. And by the way, Jacob's going to get way worse.
This isn't even that bad. It's confusing, but it's not bad.
It's going to get, well, I mean, he lies. Bad. It's bad, but it's not as scandalous as some of the stuff that's coming.
That's a better word.
But in this, it's like, the Bible is like, look how bad they are. Is God going to leave them? Mm-hmm. Do you think God's going to be like,
that was good,
I'm done. Like, you people act like this, I'm out. Like, the reason why the Bible comes to us with these stories, just like it did with Abraham, just like it did with Isaac and Genesis 26, is to make you go, why does God keep loving them? Yeah. Why does God keep showing faithfulness to them? And the answer is, thank God that he does, because we're those people. And so anyway, in this chapter, Isaac's going to be reaching the point where he's like, I could die at any moment. Like, health isn't great. Vision's going away. Like, if I'm going to declare which of my sons is going to receive that blessing that was handed down to Abraham, that God and Abraham handed down to me, now it's my time. I'm going to lay this blessing on somebody. And everything goes absolutely chaotic and scheming, and everybody's jockeying for who's going to get the blessing. And it is a messy story, but behind the mess is the gospel.
I think before we start, can you explain the difference between a birthright and a blessing? Because I think we've already seen the birthright. Like, he stole that. I mean, he gave him, I guess it was a transaction, but
the
taste of
lentils.
Gave away his birthright for the taste of lentil soup. And now there's a blessing. Because I think in our world, it's kind of like all one package. We don't necessarily like pick two different things.
Yeah, we don't even do, I would say we don't even really do blessings anymore. Yeah. Like, birthright maybe, and a lot of cultures you'll find that still. But a birthright, think of it, and the way I think of it at least, is like, think of it in terms of like your material life.
Okay.
So like a birthright, if I've got four kids, my oldest is Caleb. In the ancient world, what that would mean is Caleb would be the one who runs the tribe. He is the elder in a patriarchal culture. He's going to be the lead. He's going to be the one who speaks on behalf of the family. That is his birthright as the firstborn. He's going to be the one who gets a double portion of the inheritance. So of all my liquid assets and my bank accounts and my retirement plans and everything else, if we lived back then, it would be like, okay, Caleb, I have four kids. We're going to break it down into five sections. Caleb, you get two. Everyone else, the other three get one. But you get a double portion of my inheritance. And oh, by the way, all of the family lands you control, the family business you control, the family servants, like all of that stuff, you are in the driver's seat. You are going to be the CEO of Caston Smith family going forward. And so the birthright went to the firstborn. That's primogeniture. And that's the birthright. The blessing is kind of unique here. And that is, remember, God comes to Abraham and says uniquely, he doesn't go to any other family with this blessing. Mm-hmm. And he says, hey, you, this is the blessing on you. Through your descendant, all of the nations on earth are going to be blessed. And then you're going to find Abraham, who gives a blessing over Ishmael. And it includes, by the way, this blessing includes some not so great news. you're going out, right? You're going to have all this stuff. And there he speaks a blessing over him. And then he looks at Isaac and the blessing is you're going to get all this stuff. Then Isaac is going to lay blessings in this chapter on both Jacob and Esau, but Jacob is going to be the one who carries on the covenantal blessing of God, the one that will carry the line of salvation. And when Jacob's on his deathbed, what does he do with his kids? He's going to say, this is your blessing to each of his 12 sons, and this is your blessing, and this is your blessing, and the end of Genesis is 12 different blessings to his various sons. And by the way, the birthright there isn't necessarily the same as the blessing, because he'll look at Judah, and Judah's going to be the one who will carry on the messianic line, right? And he says, you know, kingship belongs to you. He gives messianic language to Judah. But then he looks over at Joseph and says, I'm going to split the inheritance of the promised land, and your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are going to get territories, which means Joseph got a
double portion.
And it seems like in some sense, he got a birthright, and yet Judah got a
blessing.
You see how that, okay, that they're different?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're dealing with here. So Jacob's already kind of schemed and been like, hey, Esau, sell me your birthright so that I become the CEO. And Esau's like, I don't care about any of that. Like, I don't want pole position in this family. I don't care what's going on with God in this family. I don't want the promised land. I don't want all those things. And then this one, it's, I want the covenantal blessing. I want God's favor to be on my line. Big deal. But again, Esau has already shown he's not all that interested in the things of God. He really wants the favor of his earthly father, not so much his heavenly one.
Yes.
The heavenly one. So Genesis 27, verse 1, let's jump right in. It says, when Isaac was old, which is like, again, we've talked about how Isaac doesn't get much ink. It's like we just get introduced to Isaac. And
his kids are born. We see one happening. Now he's dead.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, now he's done. He's looking to move on. And you're like, man, Abraham gets a lot of ink. Jacob gets a lot of ink. Isaac, not so much. So Isaac's old. And his eyes were dim. What's that mean? It's like he's losing his vision. He's blind, right? So that he could not see. And he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, oh, my son. And he answered, here I am. And Isaac said to Esau, behold, I'm old. I don't know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, because remember, he's a hunter. And Isaac is super proud. He's
a man, yeah.
He's super proud to have a hunter as a son. Take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out in the field and hunt game for me. And prepare for me delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die. So now,
his family's trading a lot of stuff for food.
Like, right?
A lot of serious food. Things revolve around a meal.
Think about how much stuff in the Bible happens with food.
Yeah.
I mean, back to the fall. It's eating. I mean, you could trace this out. Food and drink are going to be big deals.
We just have so much access to everything modern times too. Like, I don't have to go out and hunt for my dinner tonight. Like, that would make it more of a relational thing. Like, hey, Dad, I did this for you.
Yeah.
I didn't just go to Publix. Like, I went and killed something and handled it.
It's a big deal. The sacrament, the Lord's Supper. Like, there's so much that revolves around this. Even Revelation, like, what does Jesus say, like, at his second coming? He's looking forward to sharing the feast, the wedding supper of the Lamb. Like, everything is associated with, like, this is a great celebration. We're going to have food because we don't eat, you know, huge chunks of meat every day. So go hunt, kill something, bring it back. This is a big deal. We're celebrating. Ceremony I'm about style. To give you the blessing. But now stop here for a moment. In Genesis 25, what did God say to Rebecca? The blessing is supposed to fall on who? The younger. Who's the younger? It's Jacob. And now you have Isaac, who's like, no, I like Esau better. So I'm assuming, the Bible doesn't say, but I'm assuming at some point Rebecca has got to be like, because she loves Jacob, right? He loves Esau. We got favoritism going on in this family, which, by the way, is terrible. It always ends poorly. You got to know that Rebecca at some point was like, Isaac, God told me, like, it's supposed to be Jacob. It's supposed to be Jacob. And Isaac is now hearing this, and either he doesn't believe Rebecca, right? Like, I don't believe God said that. Do you pay attention to who he is? Like, do you see how he schemes? Do you watch his character? Like, the covenantal line of God is not going to go through the supplanter. Like, no chance. So either he doesn't believe her, or his love for Esau is so great that he's like, I can't. No, I, you know, even if God wants, like, I am giving the blessing to Esau, even if God has said it should go to Jacob, I'm rebelling. So now all of a sudden you get like this beautiful family. Isaac's the praying guy and Rebecca's the praying one. And both of them act more godly than their predecessor. Now all of a sudden it's, wait, there's a crack in this home.
Yeah, they're messy.
There's a crack in this home.
I also don't think this family communicates well. I think all throughout the ages, they just have not.
They're really bad at communicating, apparently. But now you have husband against wife, kid against kid. And by the end of this, they're all divided.
It's like two teams.
I mean, in one chapter, this thing just withers and crumbles and cracks. And we'll get into that. So you have Isaac blind, who says, Esau, go kill something. We're going to have a feast. I'm going to give the blessing to you. But now Rebecca was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. What does that tell you?
Everyone just, I was like, is that like Sarah overhearing things? I feel like there's a lot of overhearing in this family, it's like, too. Like, what's he doing? Do you hear? What? He's going to give the blessing?
Like, she's scheming. And it's like, huh, like mother, like son, right? You know, she's like, what is he saying? He's giving the blessing to Esau? And so when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and to bring it, Rebecca said to her son, so who's the first liar coming up here? I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord, before I die. So now, so instead of being like, let me go talk to Isaac, because this is a bad plan. God has clearly declared that he's going to show favor on you, Jacob the younger. She's like, let's go into full-blown lie mode. Like, we're going to scheme. And this reminds you of Abraham and Sarah being like, try Hagar. Like, God's promise doesn't look like it's going to happen. So we're going to go in front of God and scheme to make it happen and break the rules to make it happen. And so Rebecca at this point is like, we'll just lie. Like, we got to protect God's promise. So we'll just lie to make it happen.
And this was confusing because of the lack of details, because it does seem like she's doing the right things. I know she shouldn't lie. So that's hard to, you know, hold those two things. But because we don't know the details, like, she's actually weirdly the obedient one. I know she's lying. I'm going to caveat that every time. But
she's the one who cares about God's comment.
Yeah, because if Isaac gives Esau the blessing, he's in supreme disobedience. And this, I don't know what happens to that. I don't even know where to go.
It's a messy story. Again, it's like, it is a messy story where the ethical quandary is like, well, this is what God said. So by lying, she's protecting what he said. But is she called to lie to protect God's promise?
And I guess we don't know what Isaac knew.
I'd say no. I still don't think you should. Like, I mean, it would be like this. If I could lead somebody to Jesus and I'm thinking, like, I know what would really, like, tickle their ears, and I know what, and so I'm going to lie about what the scripture says, or I'm going to lie about what Christianity offers so that they just make the decision. Is that honoring to God?
No.
But it's their eternal soul. What if they give their life to Jesus and I lied to them, as opposed to if I didn't? And this is where it's like, you either trust the sovereignty of God or you don't. Mm-hmm. Right? If God calls me to be an honest person, you know, apart from like protecting people's lives and stuff like that, I think there's interesting things on that. But if I'm called to be an honest person, like, I trust God with it. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to tell you who Jesus is. I'm going to tell you what Christianity is. I'm going to trust God and the Holy Spirit to work that out. Right? And this, Rebecca comes and is like, oh, no. I've got to intervene to protect God and his plan from Isaac. And so what does she do? She looks at Jacob and says, all right, now, therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two young goats, good young goats, so that I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, for as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat so that he may bless you before he dies. So straight up deception. She's like, oh, you know.
She's got a plan ready, too, which either she's a really quick thinker, which she could be, or she's like, I've been planning this. So,
to the point of the planning, like, why does Esau not just grab one of them? Like, Isaac is like, oh, you're a hunter. I want you to go get some fresh ones, like, prove your skill, because I'm really proud of you, son. You have these skill sets. When there's animals to eat right outside. And so he goes off on this hunting mission, and she's like, let's go get one of the animals that we have tied up out back, and we'll make it just the way that he loves it. And so, and it says, by the way, if you look back in Genesis 25, verse 28, it says, Isaac loved Esau. Why? Because he ate of his game. Like, what? Like, great job, Dad. Because he ate of his game. He's really proud. Like, my kid is a skilled hunter. And when I eat, it reminds me, like, look at you. Look at what you've become. You've become this wonderful man and skillful man that can go out and read nature and find the animals and trap them or kill them or shoot them with a bow and arrow. Like, you're really good. And when I eat this stuff, it just fills me with pride remembering who you are. And, man, I love you, Esau. You make Dad proud. And then there's the schemer over there, you know. And so now they've hatched the plan. And listen to who's the reasonable one here. In verse 11, it says, but Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, yeah, behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man, which is wild, incredible. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I'll seem to be mocking him, which, by the way, that word there is that laughter root. I'm going to be making laughter for Isaac, whose name means laughter. The Hebrew does cool stuff like that all the time. I'll be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing. And his mother said to him, you let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go bring them to me. So he went and took them and brought them to his mother, and his mother prepared delicious food such as his father loved. So it's not like the game tastes better because it was hunted. It's just merely that he's proud of his son for having hunted. But notice Jacob comes in and you're like, oh, maybe Jacob has conscience here.
And he'll just say, no, mom, this is crazy.
Yeah, like, we shouldn't do this. What's his concern?
We're going to get caught.
And what if this causes me to get a cursing rather than a blessing? I don't care that I'm deceiving my dad. I don't care that, you know, I'm doing this thing dishonestly in the sight of the Lord. I don't care that I'm helping your marriage with him form a fracture. Like, what if I get a curse? Not what if you get a curse, mom?
Yeah, I don't care about anyone but me.
It's I don't care about anyone but me. I want the blessing, and I don't want to do anything that's going to endanger that. So the moment she says, if there's a curse, it'll fall on me, what does he do? Deal. You know, I'm in. And he goes and takes action. And it says, Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. Why?
Got to look like him, smell like him.
Not look, because Isaac's blind, remember? But smell. He's going to smell like him. And you can imagine, like an outdoorsman, like you're skinning animals, there's blood and weird stuff, and probably body odor and all this gross stuff. And so Jacob, who's, you know, in the tents with his mother, is now putting on the clothes of an outdoorsman. And there's a different scent there, because it's not like they have washing machines that are, you know, like, you know, cleaning these things up super well. So the best garments of Esau are on Jacob now, along with their scents. And verse 16, and the skins, this is crazy to me, and the skins of young goats she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Like, how hairy is this dude?
Yeah, poor guy.
Because, like, arm hair or neck hair, like, it's like fine. You rub it and it's like, you know, cotton or something. It's like super fine.
She's like fur.
Like, get a goat, put goat skins. Like, it's goat skins are like, it's rough, it's woolly. So that's covering his hands and his neck. And it's like, dang, Esau, this dude really is hairy. But that's going to be the best way to deceive dad. Cover him with goat skins. And she put the delicious food and bread, which she had prepared, into the hand of her son Jacob. And so all of this, you'll notice, is aimed at fooling each of the five senses. Like, it's very deliberate in all of these things. Because for Isaac to give the blessing to Jacob, he's got to believe that it's Esau. And he's got five different senses to fool.
And test, yeah.
We know, first off, how do you take care of his sight?
Already taken care of.
He's old. His vision is gone dim. He can't see. So he's not going to see that it's Esau rather than Jacob. And it says, so he went into his father's household. By the way, if you pay attention to this story, there's seven different scenes where it's like a camera shift or something, like, oh, here's a new scene.
It's kind of soap opera-y.
Yeah, it is. So this is scene three. So he went into his father and said, my father, what's the problem?
He can't fake a voice.
Yeah. As he going, hello, dad. You know, I'm the manly son. Like, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. And he said, here I am. And he goes, here I am. Who are you, my son? So out of the gate,
There's something fishy.
Like, well, that's not quite Esau. Who are you, my son? And Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn.
Also, like, what a bad script, because, like, Esau does have to prove he's a firstborn every time he enters.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of my game. Notice it's just my game, that your soul may bless me. Notice how many times as you go through this chapter, by the way, blessing, bless, bless, blessing, blessing. It's like obsessive. Like, that is what Jacob wants. But then the question is, why is Isaac so cynical? Because you're not told what the family life is like for all these decades prior to this moment. But Isaac is extremely cynical about Jacob. It's just abundantly evident. Like, all right, who are you? Are you really him? And so Jacob comes to present game. Which of the senses does that fool?
Taste.
Taste, right? Like, oh, this does taste like smell, what Esau brings. Yeah. But Isaac said to my son, how is it that you found it so quickly, my son? So again, I don't trust Jacob. I want to dot all my I's and cross all my T's here. How'd you find it so quickly? And he answered, well, because the Lord your God, well, he granted me success.
Getting grosser.
Gross.
Now we're bringing God into this.
Yeah, God has so clearly favored me. It's because the Lord is on my side, Dad, as he's deceiving and lying and everything else. And so it's like, God, this is your guy? Are you sure? Like, you really want this guy? And then Isaac said to Jacob, please come near that I may feel you. Like, if you're not, like, think about this. If he's not just trying to make sure that it really is Esau, like, if you came into your dad and he's like, I need to feel you. Like, please come near that I may feel your fur. But this is how skeptical, how suspicious Isaac is about the character of Jacob. Please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not. Crazy. So Jacob went near Isaac, his father, who felt him and said, man, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And all this time, Jacob's just there hearing all this, knowing he's guilty, and just letting his father make the error. So, all right, so we have the taste that's fooled. He comes forward. He feels the fur on his hands and on his neck. What sense is that?
Touch, feel.
Touch is fooled. And so then we continue on, and it says he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, are you really my son Esau? So even now he's like, hi, gosh, are we sure here? And he answered, I am. What's significant? Like, anyway, verse 25, then he said, bring it near to me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you. So he brought it near to him and he ate and he brought him wine and he drank. What sense? This all taste. Then his father Isaac said to him, so we've had the meal, we've had all the stuff. His father Isaac said to him, come near and kiss me, my son. And so he came near and kissed him. And what do you see there? Betrayed with a
kiss.
So everything about Jacob in these early chapters, he's a deceiver, he's a supplanter, he's a heel grabber, he's everything about him. And now he's betraying with a kiss. Like, all of the identity markers of Jacob should make us go, just gross. Is there anybody who betrays a friend or a father with a kiss and a knife in the back? Like, that's like the worst you could do to me. Enemies I can brace for. And people who hate me and they've always hated me, I don't love it. I'm a people person. I like for people to like me. And I don't know that there's a whole lot of people who hate me, but like, I can brace for them pretty well. But when it's like the Psalms say, you know, it was my close friend who turned on me. Hmm. That's crushing.
That hurts.
That hurts deeply. And now you have a son.
Could be the worst.
Kissing the father as he's deceiving him to bring real pain into his world. And it says Isaac smelled, because he's close after the kiss, Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, huh, see, the smell of my son, that's the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give, and here comes the blessing, may God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth. I want all the land that God has promised us, like this land that's incredible, that grows crops well, that's close to the water sources. May God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, that your mother's sons bow down to you. In other words, you are going to have primacy in this line. Cursed be everyone who curses you. Ooh, that sounds a lot like the one given to Abraham. And blessed be everyone who blesses you. And so he is laying down the covenantal blessing on Jacob. And his sight's gone. His touch is fooled. His smell is fooled. His taste is fooled. His hearing was always faithful. This is the voice of my son Esau, or my son Jacob. And I think that's instructive, right? Like there's something about hearing the voice of your master, recognizing the voice of those that you love that the Bible will pick up on. Like Jesus talks about that. Remember that? Like what does Jesus say?
The sheep will know my voice.
That's right. Like you should be able to differentiate, and to speak spiritually, right? You should be able to differentiate the voice of your Father in heaven and the voice of the father of lies. And what there are different voices.
Yeah.
And you should recognize before you give in, like if Isaac had trusted his hearing and knowing the voices of his sons, he wouldn't have fallen into this deception. And so for us, like, how do you differentiate between the voice of the father? What does the voice of the father sound like? Let's just do this little thought experiment versus the voice of the father of lies. What does the father say? What does the devil say?
Well, one's lies and one's honest.
Mm-hmm.
One speaks accusations, doubt, all that kind of stuff from Satan.
Mm-hmm.
It's the father, it's love, it's mercy.
Mm-hmm.
It's blessing versus cursing.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm going to pause here and do a little side trick because I think these things that come from Satan, there's a very predictable playbook that you can start learning to recognize his voice. And it goes something like this. You find this in the temptations of Jesus in the wilderness. You find this in Jesus or the Satan's temptations of Adam and Eve in the garden. But it comes like this. It will come and make you question the authority of God's word. Always, right? Like
not blatantly, just enough.
Yeah. Did God really say that? Like, does he really not like that? Is he really putting that off limits? You know, like why you should be able to do that. Like,
yeah.
And then the next one is if he really loved you,
yeah.
Would he
withhold anything?
Anything? If he really loved you, surely you're not going to die. Surely God would never let a bad thing happen to you, or he would never allow suffering if he really loved you. And so you find yourself in these seasons where it's like, man, my life has fallen apart. Like, is God angry with me? And Satan will come to you and say, he doesn't love you.
Yes.
That's the voice of the enemy. God doesn't love you. He's a tyrant. He's put all these things on you. You've been faithful. He's been cruel. You should cast him off. You should find freedom. You should be like God. You would do better. Your plans are better. Your ways are higher. You should follow your heart. That's always the voice of the enemy. He makes you a victim and he makes God a villain. He comes to you and he always twists the words of God. Right? He doesn't run away from this. He'll quote scripture at you and then he'll twist it like he did with Jesus. Like God said, the angels would catch you lest your foot dashes against a stone.
So throw yourself off.
Yeah. God would never let you suffer Jesus if he loved you. What does Satan want Jesus to come to believe?
That he should not suffer.
I should not suffer. I should never go to a cross because if God truly loved me, he'd never let me suffer. When Peter says to Jesus, I will not allow you to die. I'll never allow that to happen. What does Jesus say to Peter?
Get behind me, Satan.
Yeah. Peter's like, I'm not going to let you suffer because the Messiah would never be allowed to suffer. God would never allow somebody that he loves to experience pain. And Jesus is like, ooh, that is the number one lie of the enemy, that God forsakes those that are in pain and suffering, that God has somehow abandoned them. That's a lie. So you recognize the voice. Just want to pause there. That would have been the one thing that could have spared Isaac here, was trusting that he knew the voice. And we as Christians need to get really good at recognizing the voice, because, man, those accusations, like you say, they will come. And you need to get really good at filtering. Is that the voice of my Father in heaven, or is that the voice of the father of lies? And it'll help you quite a lot.
Yeah, because Satan has the pileup effect. At least that's what I've seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I don't catch the first accusation or the first doubt or the first thing, there's always another one. There's always another one until I finally realize that I'm buried under it. That's like, oh, that was that the whole time.
Yes, and then you're stuck. And then you're taking every thought captive. Instead of to the gospel, you take every thought captive to darkness. And I really am no good. I really am this. I really am forsaken. God's anointing has left me. Like, you'll chase those rabbits. Your brain is really good at that. And the heart is deceitful above all else, as Jeremiah says. You know, you got to check it every once in a while. You're your worst accuser. So in this story, getting back to this, why in the world does God give us the story? It feels kooky, doesn't it?
Yeah. Feels like there was a smoother way to go about this.
Yeah. But I mean, just even the details of it, you're like, why ordain the story like this? Why include it in scripture? Why does all this happen? And I would argue that what's going on here is such a beautiful picture of what the gospel is, except it's a twisted one. It's like the photo negative. So let me retell the story.
Okay.
And you'll hear it immediately. We read right past it, but when you retell it, you kind of hear it immediately. You have a son who's wayward, that has a strained relationship with the father that's severed somehow, right? And he's a schemer. He's done lots of stuff. He's kind of a sinful guy that's undeserving. And so in order to get the blessing from the father, he has to go before the father and take on the garments of the firstborn son. He has to take on the aroma of the firstborn son. He has to share in the meal of the firstborn son. And so when the father sees the schemer, the deceptive one, the unworthy one, clothed in the image and likeness of the firstborn son, then all the blessings of the father fall upon him, even though it's entirely undeserved.
Mm.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's Jesus.
That's the gospel. That is absolutely the gospel, except here's the incredible part of the gospel. Is it's not wrapped up in this crazy story of deception where, you know, we've got to be like, okay, let's fool God the Father into thinking that we're, no, what is the story of the gospel is that the firstborn of all creation, the firstborn from the dead, like that's how Jesus is described, right? What does he do? He looks at all of his adopted brothers and sisters that are floundering, that are scheming, that are unworthy, that would have no hope of an inheritance, no hope of blessing, that are totally lost. And what does he do? He's not like Esau that's like, you know,
whatever.
He comes down. He comes before the father and he says, Father, I would like to give them my garment.
Sure.
I would like to clothe them in my likeness. I would like to make them in my image of perfect righteousness so that all the blessings of the Father, the infinite inheritance of the Father, can fall upon them, even though they are utterly undeserving, even though they are the schemers, but I want to transform them. And so I will give up my sole right to the inheritance so that they can have it. That's the gospel.
Yeah. Those people don't look like me, act like me, speak like me, smell like me. I want them to become like me.
Yeah. So think about this. When you get to the New Testament, like this is not a theme that's, you know, that we're just making up. Listen to the language. Let me just quote some scriptures. You ready for this? Because why does it say this? Romans 12:14, clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ. Clothe yourselves in him. 1 Corinthians 15:53, the perishable, that which is dying, must clothe itself with the imperishable. What's that mean? Don't go before the Lord pretending that you're good enough.
Yeah,
that
my like, perishable body's good.
Isaac is blind. Isaac can be fooled. Guess what your father in heaven will not be? He's not going to be deceived. He's not blind. He sees, not only does he see you as you are, he sees you perfectly as you are. He sees even more than you know about yourself. So he sees you to the very bottom. He sees every flaw. He sees everything about you. You will not go before him on the day of judgment and be like, no, I'm a really good person. Look. Like, he's going to be like, oh my goodness, I see to the core of your soul. I see all the selfishness. I see all the guilt and shame and hatred and vice and everything else that you bring to the table. There's nothing you can do to disguise yourself from the Father except receive from him what he offers, which is to be clothed in the image of his Son, to stand in the righteousness of his Son, to where you're not going, please, God, just please, I hope I can fool you into thinking that I'm worthy to come into heaven, that I'm good enough for you. You're not. No, who could be good enough for God? That's such a foolish temptation to think you can stand before God and be like, you're lucky to have me. Here's my resume, and I've done nothing but great things all my life, and I'm worthy of heaven. You're not. You're not even close. You're not even in the same universe with the righteousness of God. And yet God comes, the firstborn of God comes and says, I'll clothe you. I want you to share. Just receive it. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. The perishable, that which is dying, must clothe itself with the imperishable. 2 Corinthians 5, 2 and 3. Meanwhile, we groan as sinners, longing to be clothed with our heavenly dwelling, because when we are clothed, we will not be found naked. Galatians 3, 26. You who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. And listen to Romans 8. Just look how this puts it together, because it's like the whole story of Jacob and Esau here. It says the Spirit himself, this is Romans 8, starting in verse 16, 17, jumping to 29. The Spirit himself, now just break this down. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, like Jacob, I am a child of the Father. And if children, then heirs also, heirs of God. Like I'm getting the inheritance, I'm getting the blessing, and fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be what? Conformed into the image of his Son, so that he would be the firstborn among many brothers. There he is. He's the firstborn. He's entitled to all the inheritance. And what does he want to do with that? He wants to conform you into his image so that you can become heirs with him. That's the story.
If
he who did not spare his own Son, but delivered him over for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things?
Yes.
And the incredible thing about this is we get this blessing and we don't have to deceive. You know what it requires? Is a brutal honesty to come before the Lord and say, I'm a mess. And I need this. That's all. Like, we don't have to deceive and be like, we're good enough and look at us. And we really are what you expect from us. And we really are who you want us to be. It's like the way to the gospel, the first one, like what the first of the Beatitudes that Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. What does that mean? The next one, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. What does that mean? It means you come to him and you're like, I don't measure up. I'm bankrupt in my soul. Like, I'm not worthy of heaven, and I mourn over it because you deserve better from me. And what's God's promise? Heaven's yours.
If.
Yeah, let me comfort you. Like, that's what's going on here. And Christ offers all of that freely to us, who is, again, Colossians 1:25. He's the firstborn of all creation. He is the firstborn. We are called the assembly of the firstborn in Hebrews chapter 12. Revelation calls him the firstborn from the dead. So everything belongs to him. And what's his desire? It's not like, oh, I'm the firstborn. It's how can I share it?
Yeah, you don't have to trick me to take it either.
That's right. That's right. It's phenomenal. So, and by the way, do you know how salvation is referred to? Just to continue the pattern and beat the scripture referencing to death here. Like Ephesians 1, 13 and 14. When you've heard the word of truth, the gospel of your salvation, and believed in him, you were sealed with the promised Holy Spirit, who is the guarantee of our inheritance until we acquire possession of it to the praise of his glory. What's that mean? When you embrace Jesus, guess what happens? The promise is yours. The blessing, the birthright, it's yours. It's yours. It's sealed. The Holy Spirit has made it yours. It's the guarantee of an inheritance. 1 Peter 1:3, and this is the last one I'll do. He has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you. You have an inheritance waiting for you. And what's the definition of an inheritance? Because I've always loved this. Like, the Bible talks about heaven as an inheritance for us. You don't work for an inheritance. It's entirely earned and accrued by somebody else, and it's waiting for you.
Yeah.
That's the gospel. It's not all your little chips stored up. Like, no, there's an inheritance waiting for you.
And it's purely relational. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't give inheritance to anyone that you don't have a relationship with.
That's right.
Usually it's your children, or if you don't have children, someone that you care about deeply. It's not just like, well, pick somebody to give all this to.
That's right. Yeah. That's a really good point. So all of this kind of weird story, I think, is so intentionally pointing to the gospel. Mm. Like, if Jacob, who is going to be renamed Israel, is the beginning of this covenant that God has with a particular people group, the offspring of Israel, the offspring of Jacob, he's called the God of Jacob. The foundation of his blessing is found when he's like, I'm a schemer, have to take the image of the firstborn to get the father's blessing. It's like, hint, hint, guess what's coming in the story? Guess how the people of God are going to receive the blessing? That's how, except without deceit. So Genesis 27, moving along, verse 30. As soon as Isaac had finished his blessing, Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out of the presence of Isaac, his father, Esau, his brother, came in from hunting. You just imagine this, like he's coming in with the animal on his shoulders. Hey, Dad, you know, he also prepared that delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game that you may bless me. And his father, Isaac, said to him, who are you? He answered, I'm your son, your firstborn, Esau. Esau's probably like, oh no, he's losing his wits.
Yeah.
You just told me to go do this.
Like, he's not trying to trick anybody.
Yeah. He's just straightforward. Like, you told me to do this. I did this. Here we go. Verse 33. And Isaac trembled very violently and said, who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it all before you came, and I've blessed him. Yes. And he shall be blessed. And as soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. But Isaac, his father, said, your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing. How do you feel about this?
I don't feel good.
Like, do you feel for Esau?
Yeah, in the midst of this story, I do.
Yeah. Like, I read this because the Bible's very harsh about Esau. We've mentioned this before. Like, rough on Esau, because Esau could care less about God. He's very, very self-absorbed in a different way, in his self-righteousness. And I wanted to bring this out because we talked about this, but I just want to show this. In the Hebrew, it says that God loved Jacob, but Esau he hated, right? And the Hebrew word there, it comes from, it's sane, is the word for hate. And you can see here the images for those words in original Hebrew were pictographs, and so it's an image that is a thorn, right? You can see thorns, and then the other one is like the seeds of a plant. And so thorns are cursing, seed is like your future. Right? And so hatred in the Bible is not like, oh, Esau, you, but it is like your legacy is not going to be good. Like, it's coming, it's you're cut off, you're out of the covenant. And that's what that means when it says that the Lord hated Esau. It's Esau's cut off from salvation. His line is he's cut off, is the idea. And so with Esau here, you're looking at him and you're like, but God, like, he did the right thing. Why is he cut off? I mean, we're going to see he's done some wrong things by the end of the story, and he doesn't care about God. But there's part of me that when I'm reading this story, it's like, no, Jacob should be the one who gets a punch in the face, and Esau should be the one who gets the hug.
Yeah.
And the Bible's coming, and it's intentionally provoking you to be like, wait, I don't like this. Why?
Doesn't feel fair.
If you showed up in the first century and you looked at the Pharisee who keeps all the rules, who keeps the Sabbath, who does all the stuff and does all the rituals and does all the stuff, and then over here's the prostitute who's broken and just realizes that her life's a mess, you'd be like, oh, clearly God, you know, to the Pharisee, the religious one, of course. And yet, what do you find in the New Testament? Yeah, his heart's far from God. He's all about himself, but he dresses it up, and I do what my father really wants, right? And over here is somebody who's broken, who just wants the blessing desperately, right? And Jacob will eventually get there. But there's a difference, right? Esau is that typical firstborn like Cain, who went out and worked really hard and dug and did all the planting and tilling and everything else and comes with this offering. But it's like, you owe me, God.
Yeah.
I don't really care about you. I don't care about your promise. I don't care about your heart. I don't care about your covenants. But I want what I want because I deserve it. And it's like, that's the death knell for any person. That's how you get cut out of a covenant, is to go before God saying, you owe me and I deserve it. Don't do that. It's mercy, humility. It's all by grace. Be that, right? Jacob is a work in progress to getting there, but he will get there eventually. But in this, the question becomes, okay, Jacob was deceptive. Esau was going to get the blessing. Isaac gives the blessing to Jacob. And then when Esau comes in and says, I want the blessing, what does Isaac say? It's too late. I've already given it. Which begs the question, what? You're the dad.
Just take it back.
Like, okay, he lied. Well, tough. I'm taking it back. Like, you got it on false terms and I'm giving it over here to Esau. There's something in the ancient world, and you find it all over the place in legal codes. Like, it's kind of interesting to go back and look at them. Like, if you go back to the Rosh Shamra tablets, which is like, you know, a code, at the end of it, there's this section that talks about how if anybody changes a single word of the blessings and curses found in this, may they be cut off, may they be destroyed, right? If you go to the Code of Hammurabi, which I don't know if you've ever read the Code of Hammurabi or looked at it or anything, this huge section at the end of the Code of Hammurabi says, it is what I have said. If anybody in subsequent generations changes one word of what I have spoken and changes what I have spoken, and it's just curse after curse after curse after curse after curse, may this God do that and this God do that and this God. And so there's something about in the ancient world that once it comes out of the mouth, it is. You don't change it.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Necessarily. But that's what I think what Isaac's feeling right now. Like, I have spoken as from the Lord of heaven. I don't have the right to go back and change it.
Yeah, Isaac's like, I feel bad. I'm stuck, but I'm not changing it.
And you find the same thing. Remember when Daniel is going to be thrown into the lion's den? Do you remember why he's thrown into the lion's den? The king had issued an edict that said, you know, if you're praying to anybody else, you're going to be punished and thrown into the lion's den. And then he finds out that they schemed this up and it's going to be Daniel thrown into the lion's den. And he's like, no, I don't want that to happen. But then what does he say?
I've said it.
And that's, you know, that's 1500 years later.
That guy's the king. He can do whatever he wants.
And that's Persia. So it's a whole different part of the world, different empire. And yet that's still the prevailing thing in the Near East. And so what we're seeing here from Jacob is that same ethic that once something holy and sacred is spoken, it's spoken. Yeah. I'm not taking it back because it's sealed. When I said it, I was saying it with the stamp of heaven itself. And so I'm not going back on my covenant. And why is that? Why is that kind of good news for us?
We don't want God at the end to be like, I said it, but yeah, I'm taking this one back.
Yeah. I didn't foresee that. So I'm going to take back the promise. Like, no covenants meant a lot in the ancient world. And that's why. And so verse 36, it says, Esau says, oh, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he's cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he's taken away my blessing. And then he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me?
Bad news here.
And Isaac answered and said to Esau, behold, I've made him Lord over you and all his brothers. I've given to him for servants. In other words, you will be his servant. Prophecy fulfilled. And with grain and wine, I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son? And Esau said to his father, but have you put one blessing, my father? Bless me, even all, me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. So a couple of things to pull out of this. There was no blessing, really. A good blessing anyway, that's left for Esau. Everything is given to Jacob in the story, right? Which means, what did Isaac intend for Jacob?
Nothing.
So this is a dysfunctional family. they're at odds. And I mean, it's obvious all over the place. Isaac is not thrilled about this, but I think at this moment, Isaac has to be going, oh, I remember when Rebecca said, you know, that the older is going to serve the younger, and I rebelled and I wanted my own way. And now God has overturned me through this deception. And I think maybe Isaac is so reluctant to do anything to reverse his actions because he realized he's the one who started this ball rolling by being disobedient to what the Lord had told Rebecca. And now it's come back in his face, and it makes you wonder if Isaac's going, ooh, the Lord caught me.
Yes.
All right, I got to stick with this. Yep. Jacob it is. You know, like, God caught me. We're not overturning this one. And so Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, behold, away from the fatness of the earth, your dwelling shall be. Remember what he told Jacob? You get the fatness. Esau, away from the fatness shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. In other words, there's going to be a family split. Your descendants are going to hate his descendants. And that happens. The Edomites, which will be Esau's descendants, perpetual enemies of Israel after this. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, oh, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. Like, he's right on death's door. Oh, I can't wait. Then I'll kill my brother Jacob. So what does this sound like? It's retelling of what story? Genesis 4.
Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel. My younger brother, who is unworthy of getting the blessing, got the blessing, and I got left with nothing. I get no applause. I get no favor. I get no nothing. Oh, I'm so mad I could kill my brother. And what's the heart of Jesus? The older brother who's like, oh, my unworthy younger brothers?
Here,
let me, please, take. Genesis 27, verse 42. But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So it's like they have like spies all throughout the house. Like, okay, you're in camp Rebekah. You're in camp Isaac.
Servants
like reporting and over listening. Like there's tapes going on. Like, you know, what are they up to? But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Oh, now, therefore, my son, obey my voice again. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother in Haran, and stay with him for a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of you both in one day? Now, this is kind of wild. What is she saying? I've lost both of my sons in a day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're Esau, how are you feeling about your whole family at this point?
Well, you don't love mom either.
Let's walk through it. Okay, Dad. You gave my blessing away and you're unwilling to overrule it? Like, imagine Esau with his dad from that moment forward. Oh, and mom, you schemed to make this happen, to take it away. What did I do to you? Like, why do you hate me? Oh, and Jacob, who actually cares. So your whole family's gone. Yeah. And if you're Isaac, think about what happens in your marriage. If you're Rebecca, how do you reconcile this? Jacob, their son, is now gone. He's going to be gone for more than a decade. Everything about this home in a moment is turned upside down. And this whole family's fractured. And it's interesting. Like, was it necessary? Was this deception necessary? What would have happened if Rebecca had said, you know what, the Lord said this and he is sovereign and I trust in him to make it happen. Even when Isaac is doing the wrong thing, I'm going to honor my family and I'm not going to scheme and divide. Like, what, this would have been a much more beautiful, like, easy story, right? Instead, this sets in motion a massive number of things that bring all kinds of pain into the world. We're going to see in the coming chapters. And so everybody's lost each other in this story. Then Rebecca said to Isaac, I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. Now stop for a moment. Why would she say that? Like, there's a couple of reasons. So they're living around the Canaanites. The Canaanites are these evil people. They're sacrificing their sons. They're doing all the crazy forms of worship. And she's looking around like, oh, these people are so gross. I don't want to be around them anymore. I can't stand being surrounded by this wicked kind of culture. And oh, by the way, guess who Esau's wives are? Remember that? Esau married two Hittite women that made their life miserable, right? And by the way, think about this. Isaac is ready to give the blessing to Esau when Esau's like, yeah, I know God doesn't want us to marry these people. Abraham made a big deal that we shouldn't marry them because their view of worship is so gross. But Esau's like, I don't care about that stuff. I'm taking Hittite women. I'm in my house, we sacrifice. You know, we do all these crazy things and to pagan gods. And so Rebecca's like, absolutely not. You will not, Jacob, take a Hittite woman. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me? I want him to separate himself from this kind of worship. And so what happens? They're going to send him off to Haran. And this is where we bring this story to an end for this chapter. And it's a fascinating ordeal to watch how quickly trying to step in and scheme and take over the Lord's, you know, plans and everything else and make them happen on your terms. How much pain, how much brokenness, how much family division, marital crisis, parenting nightmares, like it all just breaks apart in a moment.
Yeah, went bad.
And yet in the middle of it is this beautiful golden thread of what is the gospel pattern that's going to redeem all this, you know, that's going to make it beautiful in the end. And I think there's something in that to where it's like in the middle of the mess, what they couldn't see is there's a gospel pattern here that God is sovereign over the details. Even he'll even use the deception to bring about a far greater result and redeem it all.
Yeah.
And
not hide
comfort in that
and not hide them from the consequences of sin, but just because they get the promise, there's still so much messiness in the family. Like they're still hurt. There's still harm. Like we're going to see Esau and Jacob have a struggle relationship for a long time. So it's not just like, oh, you deceived, but you got the blessing and everything's okay. It's like, no, this was sin still.
Yeah.
Like, and it's
true.
There was brokenness because of it.
Yeah. Just because you receive pardon for sin and guilt is removed and shame is removed. Like there's sins in my life that still plague me.
Yes.
Even though God has pardoned me, the consequences of those sins still follow me. I mean, even down to the simple things is not taking good enough care of my body, right? Like my body's falling apart, you know, in different ways because it's like, you know, gluttony or whatever other sin, you know, those things do follow you and there's consequences for sin. There's relational consequences. When you have a weak moment, God will forgive you. When you lash out at somebody, they may never trust you again. God may forgive you, but the scars of those sins still linger in your world and it's hard. It's much better to live in a world without all that scar tissue and pain and everything else. Yet we know that there is an eternal inheritance that the firstborn has clothed us, that the Father looks at us mm-hmm. with favor, and that in the ultimate eyes of the only opinion that matters forever, we're good. But it's navigating this world now, and that's what Jacob's going to see. I think it's a good place to finish or wrap up. I want to thank you so much for watching. If you have not clothed yourself in the firstborn, the process of doing that, really simple one. It is a matter of going before the Lord and saying, God, I'm a mess and I'm unworthy of you. But I know that you sent your firstborn son to a cross to take my sins and to give me his righteousness. And that righteousness is what we clothe ourselves in to go stand before the God who's not fooled and going, oh, who are you? Now he sees you and he knows you and he loves you as you are, but he offers to clothe you in the perfections of his firstborn son so that you can share in the inheritance. And all that takes is humility and a willingness to surrender your life and say, I'm yours, clothe me. And then you get the blessing. So I want to encourage you, if you have not done that, do that today and give your life to him. It'll be the best decision you ever make. And so again, thank you for watching. Join us next time as we go on to Genesis 28. God bless. Thanks for listening to The Bible Show. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like and subscribe and leave a kind review to help us in the world of tech algorithms. Also, feel free to share with a friend. We'll see you next week with another episode of The Bible Show.